You're listening to Harris Smith Radio. Hey there, I'm your host, Wayne McPhail. This episode is about mushrooms from the edge of Canada and beer from the heart of the nation. First up, Stephanie Lipp, co-founder of Gillis Naturals, tells us about how she and her partner Leo have launched a mushroom farm in Bonavista, Newfoundland and Labrador. Yes, devoted listeners, that's the same place the Newfoundland Salt Company calls home. Next, we learn about how Harris Smith inspired craft brewing and the dozens of reasons Ottawa is the beer capital of Canada, according to some. By the way, if you want to read Harris Smith magazine instead of listen to it, you can subscribe to the print version online at harrissmithmag.com. And you can find Harris Smith magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. But for now, settle in for the next half hour of Harris Smith Radio. Stephanie Lipp was an Ontario girl born and bred until she met her partner Leo, a Stephenville, Newfoundland and Labrador lad. The two visited Leo's hometown, Stephanie fell in love with the province, and when a chance popped up to start a business in the entrepreneur-friendly Bonavista, they jumped at the opportunity. Now their passion is bearing fruiting bodies in the form of six different types of mushrooms. Here's our conversation about their fungus farm on the edge of the sea. Hey, Stephanie, thanks very much for joining us. Tell me a little bit about what Gillis Naturals does, because it's sort of like it's mushrooms, but more than just mushrooms, right? So give me just sort of a quick elevator pitch on what you actually are producing out in Bonavista, Newfoundland.
Gillis Naturals is a developing mushroom farm. So our primary goal is to grow mushrooms on a medium to large scale. They are gourmet mushrooms because they are specific varieties that are prized for their taste, for their nutrition. They're not the typical white button mushrooms that you get in the grocery store, which are also delicious, but we just have a more rare mushrooms that aren't as well known, but they're gaining popularity with chefs and in restaurants. And the other part of our business is gourmet pantry products. So my business partner and life partner, Leo, he is very passionate about fermentation and different techniques inspired by the Noma Fermentation Lab and by traditions from Japan to create other products like miso, which is make soy sauce, of amazing things you can do with fermentation.
We've talked to folks about fermentation before on this podcast, and we've actually talked to folks who are selling food out of Bonavista, Newfoundland on this podcast, the Newfoundland Salt Company folks, and you know those folks, right?
Yes, they're very lovely, and we're so glad we can call them friends and fellow business owners in Bonavista. It's a very tight-knit community, and everyone's been super welcoming and encouraging as we develop our business.
Right. Now let's talk about how you got there, because your husband was originally from Stephenville, then grew up in Ontario, went to Ontario. You were an Ontario girl, right, in Mississauga. So how did it come about that you ended up in Newfoundland, and specifically Bonavista, Newfoundland?
It's a very random turn of events that brought us here, but everything worked out so well. We kind of think it was meant to be. We had first visited Newfoundland in 2017, visiting Leo's grandparents who are still in Stephenville. And I really fell in love with Newfoundland. I had traveled around the world a lot, but Newfoundland was really off my radar. But once I got here, it was just an amazing place. But I never thought I would live here. Leo never thought he'd move back. But it wasn't until a little bit later when we were talking to his grandmother about housing prices, and we just couldn't believe how little rent was here. And we were living in downtown Mississauga, which even though it's not Toronto, the housing prices are incredibly high. And we just jokingly looked on realtor.com at house prices and saw they were actually affordable. And so I again jokingly Googled the search term moving to Bonavista, and all the articles about Bonavista and Mayor John Norman and all the companies, Newfoundland Salt Company, East Coast Glow, they all came up. And we just looked at each other and said, wow, this place sounds amazing. It's somewhere where we can build a business. It's beautiful. And just about 9 months later, we were packed into our car with our cats and driving across four provinces to our house that we bought. And during the time of planning our escape to Newfoundland, we had looked at different businesses that we could do. And Leo has a background in nutrition. He worked at a health food store and in fitness. And mushrooms were something he'd always been interested in and knew they were not too mainstream, but become more popular, but were extremely healthy. So we started researching mushroom farming, and that's something we both became extremely passionate about. And so the mushroom farm idea was grown, and we started developing our business plan and figuring out how we're going to make it work in a place that neither of us had lived in or really knew anything about. The large part of our business is the education factor. We want to help people with nutrition, teach people how to enjoy mushrooms because there's so many great benefits of them, and the fact that they're extremely sustainable. Mushroom farms are indoors. You can grow year-round. They don't require direct sunlight. They use less water than traditional produce farming, and they don't use soil, so you're not having to rotate fields, and they're vertical growing, that you're getting way more per square foot than other traditional produce.
Cool. Now, I want to talk a lot about that, but before we do, I want to come back to the thing you said about looking at Bonavista and all of the companies that are coming there and the sort of food industry and other things that are in Bonavista. Why did that happen? Like, what was the catalyst in that small community to be this sort of hotbed for young entrepreneurs like you?
That would definitely be down to our current mayor, John Norman, and his company, Bonavista Living, Bonavista Creative. He grew up in Bonavista and experienced the economic effects of the closure of the cod fishery in the early 90s, but he always had a passion for where he grew up. And after doing a few, education jobs in different fields, he came back and started restoring the beautiful old buildings here. And that really snowballed. So he renovated homes, renovated business spaces, storefronts, and that just slowly grew and grew and grew to a place that draws people who want to do these businesses.
Right, so sort of mushrooms.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your mushrooms. So you talked about vertical farming and indoors and not requiring direct sunlight and not needing to turn over soil and stuff. So paint me a picture of what your mushroom farm looks like.
It's still in developing to get the large-scale commercial base that we need to grow the business, but currently we are growing in our own small space to do, research development for our own use and for, our friends that are interested while we're getting the bigger operation up and going. But the growing area consists of an enclosed space that holds in the humidity and the temperature, so that's controlled as well. There's also a need for airflow, so we have a fan going as well. You need to exchange the air because that is a part of the growing process. Then there's shelves, which contain all the bags. So we basically want to have an environment that's conducive to growing the mycelium, which grows into the pinning of the mushroom, which then creates the fruiting body, which is the fresh mushroom, which is then harvested when the time is right.
So where do you get the actual mushrooms from, or the mushroom spore, I guess, from?
We order cultures, and those come from people who have labs dedicated to creating quality strains of mushrooms. So they're commercial strains. They are selected for their taste, their color, their strength. There's mushroom strains that are great for cooler temperatures, for warmer temperatures. And so we figure out which ones have the biggest benefits to us. And then once we receive the strain, it's kind of weird. It comes in a syringe, and we're shocked that it never gets stopped at the border because there's not a lot of information. It's literally just a syringe full of clear liquid. And so we're glad that customs left it through. And then basically we try to multiply those cultures to get as much out of it. So Leo, in a clean environment, a lab space, which we've created in our house, he transfers the cultures into petri dishes with a sterilized agar, so it's like a gelatin, which is a neutral growing material, and then that will eventually colonize. So a clear gelatin will turn white and fuzzy, almost like you'd see it on a fruit, but it's not that type of fungus, it's the specific mushroom fungus. And then that gets transferred into a jar of clear liquid with some nutrients in it. So we make a liquid culture out of it. So in the liquid, you'll see almost stringy structures in it, which are the beginnings of the mushroom mycelium. And then from that, the liquid, once it's fully colonized, we transfer it to a grain spawn jar. So certain grains, which are great for growing mushrooms, are sterilized in a jar and we put the liquid in. Then once that gets taken over by the mycelium, that's broken apart and put into the bag, which are where the mushrooms grow out of. So we call them fruiting bags.
Wow, that's really quite an involved process. And it actually, it's funny, it reminds me of when I was talking to the folks at the Newfoundland Salt Company, the sort of multi-stage process that they go through for what they're doing as well, although obviously in their case with inorganic material, not organic material.
Yes, and thankfully we don't have to go stand at the edge of the ocean all year round pulling the water out of the
No,
bay because that
no.
doesn't seem
So,
fun as being on the inside of.
tell me a little bit about I think you've got like six kinds of mushrooms that you're growing primarily. Tell me a little bit about them and why you picked those.
So the first type is blue oyster. That was probably the most common starting mushroom for any mushroom grower. Once you get the hang of the whole process, they're easy to grow. They have a relatively quick growth cycle. And they're so good, and people are familiar with them, so it's a great place to start. These are not the typical mushroom where you have a stem and a cap. They grow in a cluster, and they have a beautiful grayishy blue flesh. And when they cook up, they turn a little bit brown, and you can do something as simple as frying them in a pan with some oil. They're great on the side of meat. So those are the first ones. We also grow lion's mane, which looks like, some people say it looks like a shaggy wig or faux fur. It's a very, very strange mushroom. Again, no cap, no stem. It's very shaggy. The fruiting bodies are like little icicles growing off of the main stem in the middle. They're also very tasty. They soak up the flavor of whatever they're being cooked in, and they can almost be cut up like a steak and fried up. So they're also very versatile. And then we're in the process of growing shiitake. Those are typically grown outside on logs. The seasonal producers that do those, especially in the west coast of North America, we can still grow them in logs as in bags as well. It just takes a little bit more finesse to get that done. But again, very popular mushrooms, super tasty. And then we have two varieties that are more medicinal mushrooms. One of them is called a cordyceps militaris, and those are orange mushrooms that basically look like Cheetos when they're fruiting. That was developed off of the Cordyceps sinensis, which is found primarily in the Himalaya region of the world. And those are well known because that type grows out of a caterpillar after the fungus takes over its brain. It's a very weird thing, but they've been used in Asian medicine for thousands of years. However, the problem with that is when people harvest that, they can destroy the ecosystem. So that's why the Cordyceps militaris was developed, so that it could be grown on rice. No caterpillars involved, and you're not destroying an ecosystem, but you're getting just as much of the benefits out of them. And that's just dried and put in tea. And then we have reishi, which is another very common Asian medicine. And it's almost like a shelf mushroom with beautiful striations, usually red, orangey, brown. It has shiny leather-like consistency, and again, that is dried and pulverized and put into. So, yeah, it's almost like a lacquered wood, but it's organic.
Right. And are you planning? I know I just watched a documentary called Fantastic Fungi, and it was a terrific documentary. And there seems to be a
It's amazing.
growing interest in the sort of psychedelic versions of mushrooms. Is that something you're going to be exploring as well, or is the medicinal going only as far as sort of the Chinese herbal stuff you're doing?
At this time, until there's a lot more research and because of legality, we are not at all touching psychedelic mushrooms. We're completely fascinated by the research, but we would only go down that route once we had all our pharmaceutical licenses and it was legal here because we don't want to be banned from other countries and we have an export plan for our mushrooms, so we don't want there to be friction with any government bodies. And that's a different process to grow most psychedelics. They're grown in some kind of manure, and so we don't want to have that in our lab as a substrate, sterilize and do all these things. So that's a better left to other people
Right. Yeah.
to deal with.
So let's talk a little bit about shipping. One of the things with the Newfoundland Salt Company, obviously they have a product that isn't going to spoil, but they went to a lot of trouble to create glass containers to keep the waste down and stuff. But you've got something that is very spoilable, right? Unless it's dried, but the sort of fresh mushrooms that you grow. So are you selling them just locally, or are you shipping any fresh mushrooms out of the province?
For now, it'll be local for the fresh mushrooms. We are working with some other business people here that have experience shipping out perishables. So once we have a better export plan and a viable customer, we're going to definitely be looking into that. But mushrooms are best consumed within a few days of being harvested. We see the mushrooms that are available here in large chain grocery stores, and I believe the company that makes those is based in Burlington in Ontario. And through no fault of theirs, by the time they get here, they're just not appealing. And I think that contributes to why mushrooms aren't always a go-to produce staple, because they just don't look great. And people have a lot of preconceived notions about the texture, the flavor of mushrooms. So it doesn't really do any service to anyone to have mushrooms turn up like that in the grocery store. So we really want to focus on getting the fresh mushrooms to the range of where they're going to look and taste the best. But dried mushrooms are still great. People can use them very easily. So we definitely want to be exporting our mushrooms and other secondary processing pantry items.
Within the province, are you hoping to sell into retail, into restaurants, or do you want to also sell to the public? And where do you see your major market within province going to be?
Definitely restaurants. Just between here at the end of the peninsula and Clarendonville, which is just the Bonavista Peninsula, there's around 20 restaurants. And then we can go further afield from there through Gander, Twilling Gate, Corner Brook, and we even have a restaurant in Stephenville that's interested once we can get the supply chain going and enough produce made. So there is the wholesale side, but we do want to get mushrooms sold to individuals because they are healthy. The island only has a 72-hour supply of produce should there be ferry shortages or any reason why new product can't reach the island. And we import 90% of the vegetables that are eaten. So we want there to be a year-round healthy option for Newfoundlanders so that we're not as reliant on outside sources of healthy food.
So you're trying to contribute to sort of food security within the province to some extent.
Yes, that's something that we want to contribute to as much as possible through education, partnering with organizations like Food for SNL. We'd love to get our mushrooms into their farm to healthcare project where they serve local produce in care homes, hospitals, and schools to encourage better nutrition.
Right. Now let's talk about pricing, because one of the things with the Newfoundland Salt Company was that it's a fairly expensive product. It's a great product. You know, I love it. And when we were down in Newfoundland, my wife and I this summer, we picked up more of it when we were down there. And fortunately, it's pretty well available in the province. So is this what the mushrooms you're producing, are you considering them a high-end food item, or how are you pricing and how are you thinking about it in when we're talking about food security in terms of the food economics as well?
We want the fresh mushrooms to be as accessible as possible. They are still an artisanal product where they are made by currently only two people at a small, medium scale. As we grow, we definitely want to have full-time, year-round employees, not as common as, you know, somewhere like Ontario, where the majority of people have full-time jobs. Many people here only have part-time seasonal. So, you know, providing that employment helps not only the community, but us to get a volume so that we can make sure the prices stay low. It's in our dry products and our pantry products that those will be a bit of a higher price point, because again, it's very specific technique and even taste for those type of products. And we also want to be able to make sure that we can support donating part of our product to food banks and other organizations that help feed people who really need help. So we're going to make sure that our pricing supports the business, but also supports our mission of feeding people.
Cool. Now, one of the things that the Newfoundland Salt Company folks were joking about, they want to be able to sell salt to France, which would be lovely irony, right? Have you got an interest in selling internationally into the States, into Europe at all? Or what are your, I know it's early days for you, but what are your, when you think out 3 years, 5 years, what are you thinking about?
We would definitely like to expand with our export plan. Into Europe would be amazing, to Asia even. One of the really cool things that's happening here on the peninsula is that we will soon, hopefully, be designated a UNESCO Geopark, which is an internationally recognized name in environmental tourism. We have incredible geological formations here, geological significance, and that brings a lot of people from around the world. So we're hoping that with people coming here from cultures that are very into mushrooms, they'll find that we have a niche product that, even though you can get mushrooms in Asia, you can get mushrooms in Europe, they'll want to have that to bring back as something special that comes from a very particular place on their trip to this beautiful place, you know. So that's definitely part of it, to get brand recognition in places where there's also brand recognition for Geopark.
Right. Now, is there any sense of, you know, obviously a lot of food that's grown in different parts of the world, the terroir really makes a difference in terms of the flavors. Is there anything in the atmosphere in Newfoundland that's going to make the mushrooms any different there than if they were grown elsewhere in the world?
Well, our air is super clean and pure. It really, you know, clean water. And I think that it's just the attention to the environment, the attention from a small team that makes it a Newfoundland product, that it's done with love, which sounds a bit cheesy, but we really are passionate about this product and we're passionate about the place it was made. And I think that always comes out in the brand identity and the company values.
You, right now, there's two of you working in the it's not really a factory right now. It's a small farm at this point, right?
No.
Right. So what size is it and what kind of volume of produce are you producing now?
Yeah, it's very, very small. We had some issues over our first winter here, which was one of the snowiest in about 30 years of people's recollection. So all of the progress we had made over our first summer came to a screeching halt because we just couldn't maintain the temperatures in our growing area. So we had to research some colder weather strains and basically start the process from scratch. So we're hoping in the next couple of weeks we'll be able to have a volume of mushrooms that we can start selling to the people that have been asking us in the area, and then slowly growing from there.
Locally, what have you found in terms of dealing with municipal government or provincial government in terms of producing and selling produce in Newfoundland?
We haven't delved too much into that yet because we haven't had enough volume to really have that as an issue. We are working as part of our, you know, business plan development into making sure we comply with all of those requirements and speaking to other businesses that deal with food, what their experiences have been.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. I know you're starting out, and it sounds like you had a hard go of it at the very beginning, but I hope that in the future it really blossoms for you and that a lot of people in Newfoundland and beyond can enjoy your product. So thank you for talking to us today about them.
Thank you so much. It's been great to talk about it, and we're very excited for everything that's to come.
That was Stephanie Lipp, surrounded by lobsters, clams, and oyster mushrooms in Bonavista, Newfoundland and Labrador. Who knew that back in 1978, Harris Smith magazine just might have kicked off the craft brewing industry in Canada? Sean McCaw did, and he wrote about it recently in Harris Smith, and about the microbrewing industry of Ottawa. Let's hop to that conversation. Hey, Sean, thanks for joining me. I wanted to start off by talking about something that you mentioned at the very beginning of your piece in Harris Smith, that actually Harris Smith was claimed to be sort of the inspiration for craft breweries in Ontario and maybe in Canada. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's really, really interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting story. There's an author named Ian Coutts who wrote a really interesting book called Brew North, a History of Brewing in Canada. And it's a beautiful book full of all sorts of pictures that go back into the 20s and 30s and right up until modern times. It's a pretty book. And in it, he credits an article in the June issue of Harrowsmith, June 1978 issue of Harrowsmith by Frank Appleton, called The Underground Brewmaster. And Frank Appleton at the time kind of made a plea to the country to say, let's get back to our beer roots. Let's start making our own beer again, people. And if you think back to the 70s, it was a bit of a return to the land movement going on, and it was kind of the start of environmental awareness and environmental consciousness. So I kind of think that's where it was coming from, was a position of getting away from large corporate beers and getting our hands back into the land like we all belong.
And in your piece, you go from that to talking about craft brewers, particularly in the Ottawa area. So let's talk about what are you seeing in Ottawa itself, and then maybe go a little broader into the Ottawa Valley and in the Gatineau. Like, what are you seeing in terms of craft brewers that's really attracted your attention?
Yeah, so I think the craft brewery scene in Ottawa kind of started to emerge in the mid-90s, and there's a local brew pub here called the Clock Tower Brew Pub, and that started in 1996, and they were kind of the first people to bring a wide selection of homemade beer or locally made beer to the taste buds of Ottawa. And then since then, there's been, as everywhere in Ontario and across the country, there's been a profusion of craft breweries, and now in the city of Ottawa, within the city, there's probably about two dozen or certainly 20 craft breweries around the city. city and then up into the Ottawa Valley. If you went from the Quebec border all the way up to Pembroke, for example, there'd be almost 40 craft breweries around. And some of them, sadly, have passed away, too. I think a lot of people jumped into craft brewing, and I think it's, you know, the people I've talked to suggest it has to be a work of love. I don't think anybody's getting rich off of this, or not a lot of people are getting rich off of it, but certainly you can make a living off of it. But I know that some breweries have opened and then closed, and frankly, there's been some bad beer out there as well, although the cream rises to the top, or the foam rises to the top, and we now have some really yummy beers out there.
Yeah, I was thinking one of the brewers you mentioned was Bose, and Bose Lug Tread, at least here in Hamilton, has become sort of a staple go-to beer in a lot of places.
Yeah, Bose is a really neat story, and it's situated in a lovely little town called Van Cleek Hill, which is in the far east end of Ontario, underneath a little town called Hawkesbury, pretty close to the Quebec border. Really beautiful country down there, and they had opened that brewery back in the 90s again, and I think in the 90s anyway, and had been really, really successful, and they were probably the most successful of the outlying countryside breweries around Ottawa for a long time. And what's interesting is just a couple of years ago, the owners decided that they didn't really want to sell out to big breweries as some of the smaller craft breweries in Canada have done. And they actually basically gave the company to the employees. And now it's an employee-owned cooperative.
Oh, that's great. I hadn't realized that. This is a great story. I should check in on those guys. That'd be pretty interesting to chat with them. And before you go, because I know you've recently done a book, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about it. Tell me about what you've written.
Yeah, I recently wrote a book called Eastern Horizons, and it's subtitled A Tale of Failure and Redemption. And it's not at all about beer. It's about how Canada reacts to a great crisis, a war in Asia that precipitates the movement of several million refugees towards Canada at a time of environmental and economic collapse. And the question of the characters in the book, Canada, a couple of naval officers, and a refugee, is how do we deal with this huge crisis at a time when we don't have enough for ourselves? So the book came out in March. It's available on Amazon, and it's doing well, and I think it's an important story for us right now. It's a story about forgiveness and compassion, and that's a lesson I think we could all be reminded of from time to time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it sounds like a good one to crack open a beer and have a read of. Thanks very much.
I think that's a perfect combination.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks very much for filling us in on the beer scene in Ottawa, sir. That was Sean McQuaw enjoying a hearty red in the heart of brewing country. So, here we are at the end of this episode of Harris Smith Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to this podcast on Apple, iTunes, or in your favorite podcast player. And please, tell your friends and family. Got feedback? We'd love to hear it. You can email us at letters@harrismithmag.com. That URL, harrismithmag.com, is also where you can order subscriptions online. And you can find Harris Smith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. Until next time, for Harris Smith Radio, I'm Wayne McPhail. And also, until next time, remember these four words: make, grow, sustain, share. Tune in for the next episode of Harris Smith Radio.